Hello and welcome to Daddy Issues Podcast with Jay Glazer. Is that how we want to start?
How about this? Welcome to the most fucked up technological nightmare podcast in the history of podcasts. This has been unbelievable getting on. Jay, this is the first time that the guest has actually joined the call before the hosts, which is kind of a new twist on things. Jay, first of all, thanks for your time today. And yeah, my bro. God, you got to be spinning. We're doing this on Wednesday. The football season starts tomorrow night, and then we're off and rolling. Are you just going 100 directions right now?
Yeah, I'm getting pulled in a million directions, but I love it. It's great, man. It's, you know, I think football for us in sports, it's the escapism that we need. And like right now, you know, Joe, we just did a show the other day just to get me and Howie and Terry and Kirk back together and Jimmy on video. But it was almost like we needed this dry run of a show to remind us that we're allowed to have fun again. You know, it's kind of weird. You went in there and it's almost like there's so much going on in this country. Is it okay to laugh? And I think it's going to be on us to remind the world that, yeah, it's okay to laugh. I mean, there's some other bad stuff that's going on. No doubt about it. Right. And there's stuff that needs to be changed in this country, but it's still at the same right. It's okay to still laugh. And I think that's what our job is going to be. Our job this weekend is going to be it.
Are you in studio? You guys are all in studio. Yeah.
We're in studio. Joe will be in on the road with Troy and Aaron.
Yeah, well, look at you know, I've been watching the NBA playoffs. Go Lakers! But you look at Inside NBA. You know, those dudes are having a great old time. You know?
And that's what we need to do. Same exact thing. Yeah. But my point is, so they've been there for a few weeks. This was our first time together, and it was almost like, all right, are we allowed to do? We allowed to have fun. We allowed to laugh, and we have to remind each other that we are.
Your group is so close, Jay. I mean, and that's not always the case. I don't know that if people know that. I think somehow they feel it through their television when a group of highly compensated, big ego people get together on TV. I think it kind of seeps through if you don't get along. But I've been around you guys enough to know that it's genuine. And probably trying to stay socially distanced for the, you know, the five of you is not easy.
Well, you know, there's six of us on the show, and between the six of us, there's about 18 personalities, and Bradshaw and I have like 13 of those. And look, but you said we love each other. We are godfathers of our kids. Best man in each other's weddings. And there's been a lot of freaking weddings, I can tell you that.
Yes.
For just us. we love each other. You know, it's interesting. Mental health-wise, it's seriously. Like for me, for my mental health, I need teams. I need to be of service to others. But I always need a team. And when I'm not around my Fox and Bell Sunday family, a couple of those months, man, I struggle. And me struggling isn't good. And then when we start getting back around, so from like September to February, I'm in a much better place. And you wouldn't think that Terry Bradshaw would be like a Zoloft for me, but he is.
No, but it's interesting what you say, honestly, because mental health, obviously, there's clinical, there's chemical. But, you know, we all need that outlet. We all need that thing that makes us feel sane. You know, Joe needs the New York Post. And so he's pretty easy.
That's his team,
God,
right?
You're a bitter fucking guy, Oliver. You're a bitter, bitter fucking man. But yeah, I even to take that a step further, because it is a real point, and I'm glad you brought it up, Jay. I was talking to my therapist actually yesterday, and going through how, when these moments happen in games coming up, how I'm going to address them verbally, and how deep into these real issues do we get, because I do believe, and she backed it up really in a clinical way, people right now need a 3-hour, a 6-hour, maybe an all day Sunday break from everything they're bombarded with on television. And it's okay to check out for a few hours and just watch a football game, you know?
No, absolutely. I think that's, it's going to be on us. That's what you need more than anything. Right now, look, there's so much hate and anger. There's no middle. Everybody's just angry at each other. There's no empathy. And man, that's a lot on your soul. We need a break from that. And that's what sports is supposed to be. We're supposed to be escapism. That's it. When people get so mad at us, right, Joe? Like, oh, you hate my team. You hate my team. Give a shit about that. It's just like, we're there for escapism. We're not that freaking important. We're escapism. That is it. And that's going to be, I think it's more important we do our job in escapism this week than we've ever done it before.
Let's go back for a second, Jade. Where did you grow up?
It rhymes with Jersey poor.
You must be so proud when you flip on MTV.
I don't claim it.
You must be so proud.
No, hey, the best thing is Real Sports did a thing on me years ago, right? A profile on me. And they called my high school principal and they said, hey, we need some old high school yearbook photos and wrestling photos of Jay Glazer. And the principal said, who? They said, Jay Glazer. The principal said, who? They said, you know, you have a guy who's on national TV who went to your high school. And the guy said, yeah, we know. Mike Sorrentino, the situation. Had no idea who the fuck I was, but knew the situation. I'm like, that is fantastic.
Oh,
and guess who's never gotten money as a result?
Yeah, let me check. Yeah, exactly. So that's the best thing. That's the best thing about me leaving college early. Yeah. They don't even know I went to Indiana. They don't ask for any money. It's fantastic.
Hell no. Absolutely not. And then like someone had, we were talking about the story on the Dan Patrick Show, and then somebody had called for like the principal's niece or something and said, no, my dad, he knew he worked. No, he didn't.
No,
I'm good. It was fantastic. So yeah, that's how I grew up.
Brothers and sisters.
I got a brother, older brother.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And what was like, since the show is called Daddy Issues, your relationship with your dad growing up?
My relationship with my dad was an interesting relationship. I did learn a lot from him. I learned, look, and Joe will tell you the way I've gotten in my career, I certainly wasn't born on third base and thought I hit a triple. I have grinded. And you know, when I first walked in the Giant locker room in 93 covering the Giants, I was like, well, I can't beat these reporters at their own game. Like, man, these are all award-winning journalists and reporters. And, you know, I'm not going to be able to beat them at the game. So how could I be different? You know, and how could I outwork them? How could I be different? So my dad always taught me, if you're loyal and you outwork the world, then your dreams will come true. And that has been my credo all the way through. I'm the most loyal son of a bitch in sports, and Joe will tell you that, and I'm proud of that. And you know, I don't go after the scoops per se. I go more for the relationships, and the scoops will happen, and you know, the contacts happen, and that's how you're always, you know, stay at the top of the game. That's really what I got from my dad. My dad was always working hard, and I started covering those Giants. If guys were working from 9 to 5, I was going to work from 6 o'clock in the morning to 11 o'clock at night. I wasn't going to outwork him by little. I was going to outwork him by a lot. And that's what I got.
Did your dad have that same work ethic?
He worked his ass off. And so did my mom. Yeah. So they both worked really, really, really hard. And so I got that. But it's the loyalty part of it also. It's going to sound a little crazy. It's like, again, I need teams. So I say, so I have a fight team. And like for me, inside a cage, I feel comfortable getting my head beat in by Randy Couture and Chuck Liddell. And I always felt like a dumb kid growing up. So I felt like these for me were what made me valuable. So I feel good in there. So I need these teams. That kind of helps me through my mental health. The NFL has helped me through with my mental health, feeling like I have these teams because of this loyalty that I have, that I have these bonds and relationships. And this is my 28th year inside the NFL. So these are people, man, wow. We're talking daddy issues here. My son, I adopted my son. He has 40 uncles that have taken care of him inside the NFL and world of mixed martial arts. And man, they become family to me. So yeah, it's,
Did you adopt your son? Was he your wife's son and you adopted him?
He was my wife's, he was my ex-wife's son. And I adopted him after we divorced.
Oh, you did? Oh, great.
Because, I love him. And I think sometimes in life, you just got to do the right thing. It wasn't his fault. We got divorced.
Yeah, no, and, I know. I mean, I went, I went through something like that. You know, Kurt is my, Kurt's my stepdad, but he's my dad. He raised me. You know, he came into my life when I was 6 years old, and we had that conversation. You know, there was one moment where there was a blow up between my real father and my mother. He was supposed to pick us up. It was a whole thing at the house, right? And it blew up into this bad, bad situation. And Kurt took us in and basically, you know, asked us if we wanted to be adopted, you know. He asked us and we said no. we said no just because it didn't matter to us. It didn't mean anything to us. You know what I mean? We felt his love and we knew that he was going to be there forever. And he made that pledge to us early, early on. Whatever happens with me and your mother, I will be here for you always. You know, so we felt that.
What's beautiful about that, Oliver, is that same with me and my son, you all chose to love each other. Mm-hmm. You chose to, right? My son and I, we chose to love each other like this. That's a different bond.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you adopt to get rights, you know, like to have rights to see him?
And to make sure he wouldn't get, they wouldn't move or anything. Yeah, I'm very active, you know, always wanted to make sure it was 50-50. And, you know, for the early stages, he was living with me a lot more. And then, you know, kept going back and forth. And I just always wanted to make sure that it was, that he'd always be protected. And we'd always be together. And now he's turning 18 and my God, he's the nicest human being I've ever met in my entire life.
How old were you when you came into his life? Or how old was he when you came into his life?
He was two. I met him when he was two. Mom and I were married for a whopping, if you had 10 months in the divorce pool, you won.
Oh my God.
Hey, and Joe, you know who had 10 months in the divorce pool? On the freaking nose, fucking Rondé Barber, little bastard. 10 months.
He did.
Right at the fucking wedding, yeah. They all put in $100.
What did he win? He went a Prius like, for that? Or
they all put $100 in.
Oh my God.
At the wedding, yeah. Rondé Barber, nope. Nailed it.
At the wedding?
At the wedding, yes, at the wedding. Yep.
Wow.
My friends are Jagoffs, yes.
I love that. That reminds me of my friends. but that's a quick bond, you know what I mean? 10 months, it's like, wow, that's not a long time. It's like, I love this little
dude. Well, we're together, yeah. You know what, man? Listen, they had a rough. And there was one night, they were in the city with me. I was living in the city, and we had a babysitter for him, and she goes to leave, and he reaches over and kisses me on his cheek and on my cheek. And man, it was almost like this lightning bolt hit me. And it's like, I knew that like God put me in his life to take care of him. And I'm a big God guy, big faith guy. That's my choice to believe that I'm with someone, you know, more beautiful than me and the rest of us who are walking this walk every step of the way with me. And I just really felt a strong, you were put here to protect him.
And I can verify that, Oliver, because when I first met his son, and I've known Jay, and I can also verify that his claim about being the most loyal guy in sports is true. I mean, he's just one of those guys that whenever you call, you know, this is a perfect example, but he's squeezing this in because he's my friend. When Jay was at his most crazed, chasing down leads and texting coaches and texting players and owners and all that, when his son walked in, everything stopped. So there was something for you there, Jay, that for as much as he got out of this relationship, which is infinite, you got that same calm and that same peace from him.
Great point. He's the only thing that slows me down. And I'll tell you, the day I actually legally adopted him, at 3:52 that morning, I broke the end of the lockout. It was 3:52 a.m. And I had to go down to family court later in the day. So you imagine this now, right? Now, not only that, I don't know if you remember this, Joe, but I think you and I talked about it. When they were doing the whole lockout, it was so huge that whole offseason, I didn't go to courthouse steps once. I didn't go down. I said, hey, I'm not going to report on every jab thrown in a fight. When there's a time for a knockout, I'll be the first one with it. I was just banking on myself. I said, until then, I'm not sitting down the courthouse steps. I like Cabo and Vegas too much. So I'll see you guys in Cabo and Vegas, right? And I kept kind of taunting the other reporters how they're doing it. And thank God almighty. And what I did, though, was I told both sides, listen, I'll help you guys try and work this out. but I'm not going to get used by you. I'm not going to get used by you. I will not help you sling mud. And I hope you all both appreciate that. So when it comes time, you remember that you both give me the scoop. And that was a strategy, and it worked exactly that way. 3:52 in the morning.
Wow. Who were your who were your two contacts on each side? Who was your go-to on the ownership side?
I'm fucking telling you my sources, Joe. What is wrong with you?
Come on.
You fucking kidding me?
Kraft.
It's just us.
So
it's just
nobody listens to this shit. That's fine.
No,
that's right.
So there I go. I break it at 3:52 in the morning. Boom, I got to go on Fox and do something. I did something on the NFL Network. You got to do Fox Radio. You're doing all this, all going crazy. And then we go down to family court. When you get to family court, they like block your all cell service. So I'm in family court. I get there like 8 o'clock in the morning. And I don't get out till like noon or one. And I had zero cell service the entire time. And by the time I got out, oh my God, you can imagine the calls and the requests and this and that. But Joe, to your point, man, my phone had to go away for those few hours that I got to adopt my son. And that was one of the best days of my entire life. Not because I had this great scoop, but because he and I officially became one.
And now he's 18. And turns 18 next month. Yeah. Holy shit, that's crazy. I mean, legally, he's out of your hands.
Well, you know what's crazier? When he was home, we were doing this distance learning and shit. And, you know, he's coming over and he's like, Dad, check out my homework. And I'm looking at number 2 in algebra. And I'm like, I don't know, son. I think you got to recheck that one. I'm like, I don't know what the fuck I'm looking at. But I'm like, I'm just guessing, you know? I don't know that number 4 there, man. That symbol over there. I think it's backwards.
You know? Oh, my God. You know, I when you talk about your sources, though, what I've always been fascinated by with your world, and I have it to a certain degree. I got it when I was traveling around with the St. Louis Cardinals. I would see stuff go on in hotels. I would know who was getting along on the team. I would know who showed up hungover. I would know, you know, and wasn't available that day out of the bullpen because they were wrecked. But you file that away as personal knowledge that may shape what happens in the game, but you don't come out and say, hey, so-and-so in the Cardinals bullpen showed up today still drunk. So I'm wondering how you boat through those waters of knowing all that you know and picking and choosing what feels right to release to the world and what just goes into your bank as information for future, you know, occurrences.
I probably put out maybe 1% of what I know. And that 1%, I have to hope, is better than everybody else's 100%. And, you know, again, I'm an information broker. I got to be smart about it. You know, and again, I think early on, people just went for the scoop. Well, if you go for the scoop, you have one scoop. And listen, unless it's like a monster scoop, like people remember I had Spygate, but I broke the Barrett Robbins scoop about him going down to, the night before the Super Bowl down to Mexico. And then the Raiders having to, suspend him that day. No one remembers that was me. You know, I there's been a bunch, I reported, Joe, remember that came on week one. I said, no matter what happens after this year, Jim Harbaugh will not be back as head coach of the 49ers. Nobody remembers that's me, right? So it's short-sighted to think, man, let me throw it all away for this one scoop because everybody will, it'll make such a huge difference for me. And that's where other guys, I think, get in trouble. So for me, A, I want to make sure I'm always right. So if I say something insane like Odell Beckham's getting traded or Jim Harbaugh will not be back as head coach of the Niners after this year, I want people to know they can take it to the bank no matter what. And then the other part of that also is I want to make sure, that it's always accurate, but also it doesn't burn anybody that maybe like – Man, I reported, so here's a perfect example. I reported, years ago that the Patriots were trading Randy Moss back to the Vikings. It seemed insane, right? Absolutely insane. The person who gave me that scoop has been a friend of mine for 27 years. He has never given me a scoop before or after that night. He did that night, though. And that's the relationships that you build. So don't burn anybody. Again, it's just sports. You know, we're just escapism. You don't need to be the National Enquirer with things, but you do report things that are going to affect the game. Yes. And then I've had to do rough stories on friends of mine who popped for, I had all the Balco and had to three or four of those guys are friends of mine. I had to call them up saying, hey, man, I'm going with this tomorrow. Well, you guys tested positive for this stuff about going, you're facing suspensions, but you'd rather I do it because I'm on the sling mud than somebody else.
That's rough. That's rough, though. Shit.
Well, shit, I didn't do it. They did it.
No, I know. but still. Now, are you batting 1,000? Have you ever been wrong on a scoop?
No, I haven't been wrong on a scoop. I don't joke. I don't think I've been wrong. No, I'm not. Because I'm willing to move. I'm willing to lose every scoop as long as I have them. And I got a three-source rule, too. I have to go to three sources for each story. Because what happens is sometimes if you talk to two people, it's a game of telephone. Sometimes this guy got it from this guy. So that's it, actually one source. So I try to get three independent sources for anything I'm going to report.
What about Gronk? Did you know that very early on? Yeah.
Yeah, I think I broke that, or at least had him talking to me about it as it was happening and quoted him. But I think I had that one.
What are you hearing from Tampa Bay now that Oliver said Gronk? I personally think Brady's going to have, as long as he stays healthy,
I think
he's going to go off.
Yeah,
but so I mean, he's never had these kind of weapons. Certainly hasn't in a long time, maybe ever. Are you getting the sense even from Arians and guys down there that this could work?
I went down there to their camp and to see the amount that he's coaching up other players, the Mike Evans, the O.J. Howards, that's going to be makes such a huge difference. And I think Tom, if we're talking to Bruce Arians and Jason Light, their GM, Tom feels heard down there. He never felt heard in New England. He doesn't want to be the GM. He just wants to feel heard, whether it's the offensive game plan or suggestions for personnel. He didn't demand. So he didn't go in there and say, I want Antonio Brown. I demand. He said, hey, I want Antonio. This is why. And they said, okay, Bruce doesn't like him. It's not going to happen. He said, all right, I just want to be heard. I'm not going to – you guys do what you want to do. Even like the Gronk said, but you guys think of Gronk. He said, we'd love him. He said, I think I can get him here. Great. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't like, hey, I won't sign unless you bring him in. He's not about that. But he's enjoying being heard down there. Then we talked about his arm. And Bruce was like, Jay, the arm is the liveliest I've seen it in years. So,
Jesus. I don't understand. Yeah. The guy's like a freak.
I know. And trust me, if it wasn't, Bruce would have been like, oh, man, I got to do some work with this. And then Bruce would drink another vodka soda. And then he would say, oh, I got to do a lot more work with this. And then put on a Kango hat and then take another swig of vodka soda and bitch about it a little bit more.
I really don't want the remaining time that we have to go by without us talking about how you have evolved into a place where you're helping veterans come back and assimilate back into everyday life and how you've matched that up with players.
Thank you.
And it's been this unbelievable bridge that's not only helped those in the armed services, but it's actually helped the players learn more about themselves and be more grounded and be more maybe worldly. Will you just talk about that MVP program and what that's all about?
Man, I'm so proud of it. Look, I think it takes a crazy person to help out. Like, I'm good with my scars, so I'm able to help out other people with issues. I suffer from severe depression, anxiety, always out of my life. I'm always living in the gray. It's hard to live in the blue for me unless I am of service to somebody. So I've had to always do things. So for this, man, I put together, it's called MVP, Merging Vets and Players. And the biggest problem when you leave the military, when you leave a fight team, when you leave a football team, an Olympic team, you lose your tribe. I talked to you guys a lot today already about needing these teams, right, to help my mental health. All of a sudden, you're alone. You've done one thing your whole life, and all of a sudden, you're alone. It's gone. But then when they leave, the life skills they're given isn't great for the transition. So I said, let's put them together. Football players and fighters and look up to war fighters. War fighters and warriors look up to football players and professional athletes. Let's put them together. Let's coach them up and let's help them through the transition. And here's a perfect example. Like, we have these football players that come in. I'm trying to get them to look at themselves not like, oh, man, I used to play in the NFL. No, dude, you play in the NFL. Mm-hmm. And you playing in the NFL is not who you are. What's behind your rib cage? that got you to beat out millions and millions of people to play in the NFL, that is who the fuck you are. And that suddenly doesn't just leave when the uniform comes up, but who's reminding them of that? And then our military, they go overseas and it's be all you could be, right? You have grace under fire and courage under pressure. And they come back here, you know, home here, and they're like, oh, I'm different. And I'm like, no, dude, you're different. Mm-hmm. Different is good. Different is what leads to success. But when they're out there alone, it's hard to remind them that they need to walk around here, look at everybody out there, look right here above their heads and say, I'm not like the rest of you. And they forget what made them so great. It's not the uniform. It's what's behind that ribcage. So, you know, we're in five cities right now, Joe. We're the most vulnerable group you'll ever see in your life. Like, no one's questioned our man and womanhood. So we open up. We cry at each other constantly. We train for like a half hour just to give that burn again. But we got amputees, Hall of Fame players, Hall of Fame fighters, Marine Recon, Navy SEALs, Delta, anything and everything. Literally open up about childhood trauma, everything you can imagine. And then after we sit around, we call it our huddle. It's our fireside chat where we open up about our mental health issues and we walk this walk together. And what I'm most proud of is we're in five chapters now, 20, as you guys probably know, which is not freaking okay. And the rest of the world is getting just as bad. Of our MVPers, I believe over 70% of our MVPers have attempted suicide before meeting us. Since joining MVP, our number of total suicides in all five chapters is zero.
Wow.
Not one. Not my freaking God. One.
Isn't that incredible?
Man, I am so proud. And I do
believe. Well, I mean, it's like you're bringing back that sort of team mentality. I mean, you're using, you know, what you need and what you know, how you've gotten through and bringing that to other people who need the same thing. I think that's extremely smart. I mean, it's amazing what you're doing, but it's very intellectual. It's a very smart thing to do. It's so true. I mean, I've suffered
from depression. And we're speaking in their language.
Being alone is, you know, is a scary thing, and a lot can happen when you're alone and you don't have that group, you don't have that camaraderie, you don't have that commiseration, you know, that's awesome, man. Those are great statistics.
What's happening now also is, like you said, right, we're alone, and I think our group is going to help really change the world. I don't know if we're going to save the world, but we're damn sure going to improve it. And what's happening, the suicide rate is, people are comparing themselves right now to everybody else's highlights on Instagram. That shit ain't real. And they're going, well, my life sucks. But then they see somebody else kill themselves. And the power of suggestion, they go, wow, everybody's crying for that person. Everybody right now is like, oh my God, look at them. They're celebrating them. Well, shit, my life sucks. Why not me? You know, and it's the power of suggestion. It becomes this domino effect. So every time somebody associated with the group kills himself, we put every elephant in the room, like, boom, we put it out there. And I'll say, all right, everybody look here. Room is crying. And I'll say, all right, your person who committed suicide, whatever afterlife you believe in, you think right now they're up there in the afterlife looking down on you all, crying hysterically, saying, yes, celebrating their decision? Or are they looking down at you right now going, no, fuck, what did I do? I didn't mean to do that. No. And you guys have the ability to see the carnage you would have left behind right now. And when you put it to them that stark, they get more responsible with their decision. And that's what we're trying to really give to the whole world, man. The world is not an easy place, no doubt, but it certainly is when you have a team behind you. But you got to hang on, man. You can't, for anything, you got to make that decision of life and death, and don't be selfish. Don't put that shit on us. Don't give us all that pain and heartache. That is not fair to us.
Yeah.
You know what's funny, Jay, is I feel like from when I've talked to you, your poster man could end up being Alden Smith. And I say that because he will be a quantifiable entity for you to say, this guy came to us broken. He had the world by the tail. He had 19 and a half sacks his second year with the 49ers. Just was, you know, constantly in trouble, constantly suspended, ended up with another chance with the Raiders, blew that. And now, you know, years later, he's coming back with the Dallas Cowboys. He's been a part of this program, and he's going to go back onto the field and show the world what he has learned and how he's improved himself as a person, and then go play for the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, I can't imagine how excited you are to see him unleashed on the NFL again.
Yeah, I mean, a guy like Alden, not only that, he's walking back in literally. We talk about we walk this walk together. he's walking this walk with an army behind him on that field on Sunday night. And, you know, Alden, you know, he came in, he's been out of the league for 4 years. Somebody brought him through AA, brought him in to meet us in studio one day, and we started talking about MVP, and I started telling him where he has more value and you could probably help out other people. And so he started coming to MVP. And he's, you know, he was probably about 2 months and he kept being sober. And then one day we started talking about, you know, I said, why, you know, so why do you think you're not in the league? And he kind of changed his tune after being with the vets of, well, it's my fault. I'm the reason we're not in the league. Because usually guys, especially guys with addiction issues, blame everybody else. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden he's like, it's me. I'm the reason why. I was like, really? He goes, yeah, they don't owe me another shot. Right then and there, I said, you want another shot? And he's like, it's been 4 years. I said, dude, I think I can get you another shot. Like, you keep working with these guys, with these vets. Let them work with you. You work with them. You keep opening up and being more vulnerable. I think we could do this. And then there was one night, first night he opened up, man. He opened up this whole crew, and he was like, listen, I've never felt worthy of being loved before until mm-hmm. now.
Yeah.
So all the love you guys are showing me, I never thought I was worth it.
Yeah.
Now I'm worth it. And Joe, we train this cat every day. He played about 255. We trained him up and got him to 287 of holy shit. Well, I just had shoulder surgery Wednesday because his ass, he is a freaking monster. And, but the biggest thing was, you know, every week he's coming on with these guys, telling them the commissioner came on to an MVP session and our vets start telling the commissioner, Mr. Commissioner, he's worth it. He's worth it. He's going to be of service to so many other people, like you mm-hmm. said, Joe, who could tell others the blueprint to get back. And not just in the league, but to get go from rock bottom out. We have him reading to kids. He's checking up on our vets constantly. He's helping them with their own sobriety. That's what you have to do. You have to be of service to other people. And, you know, there's a lot of hurt there and a lot of damage. But, man, I am so freaking proud I linked him up with Mike McCarthy at our gym. So McCarthy flew out because his daughter comes to our gym. McCarthy didn't have a job. I hooked those two guys up just to, you know, meet each other. And it was like, you would have thought Alden grew up an Irish kid in Pittsburgh. How much those two guys, you know, linked up.
Oh, that's great.
And then when Mike got the job, first call, he's like, hey, man, I want Alden. I want Alden. And Alden's like, I want to go with Mike. I want to go with Mike. We finally get the contract done. Alden calls me up and says, is Sammy on, my son? I said, yeah. He goes, I want to come over and sign this at your house because I want him to see what his father did. That's pretty special. God.
Wow, and, man.
You're going to make me cry? You're going to make me cry, Jay Glazer?
And we said, thank God. That's a wrap. And he says to me, Jay, you don't understand what you've done. I said, yeah. No, it's a pretty unique story. He goes, no. What I didn't tell you is that a year and a half ago, I was sleeping under a car because that's what I felt my value was. I had a house, but I didn't feel worthy of sleeping in the house.
Yeah.
And you guys have made me feel worthy again.
You touch upon something that I think is a universal, you know, ailment, I guess, when you really, really boil it down and talking about self-love and self-worth. It doesn't matter what walk of life that you come from, you know, where your status is. If you don't think that you are worthy, or if you don't love yourself, it's hard. It's not easy to find that confidence. You know, I mean, look, I grew up as lucky as you can get of two fucking celebrity parents, right? But I really struggled with sort of self-love and self-worth. And I had to do a lot of work on myself to discover that. Now, I had a bad divorce, and there was shit that are the reasons for it, right? But, you know, I had to go through a lot of therapy and a specific place that I went to, you know, to really understand my worth. And it changed the game for me, just on a personal level, just the way I walked, a little taller, felt myself a little bit more. I was unafraid. You know, and it boils down to that. It really, really does. When you can love yourself, you know, things happen.
Well, I like to talk also, we tell all our guys, you know, love yourself up, but also, man, use your scars proudly. Mm-hmm. You know, I like to say I'm fucked up, but I'm good with my fucked upness, mm-hmm. you know,
yeah.
And again, we're different. Your scars make you different. Your scars don't make you damage. Your scars are what makes you different than everybody else, and different is good. Different is what will lead to your success. So it's exactly right. There's so many levels that we all need to learn in this country of that it's, first of all, that it's okay to love ourselves up, but that we need to love ourselves up. Like you give yourself permission. Anybody listening to this, give yourself permission to love yourself up.
Mm-hmm.
And that to me, Jay, is why social media can be so dangerous. You touched on Instagram, but you're seeing a fake portrayal of these, you know, these pictures that are all touched up, these lives that all come off perfect. Everybody's got shit they're dealing with, or Twitter, or the echo chamber of just pounding people down. That's why, you know, it would be probably, I don't even know if it's part of your program, but man, if I'm talking to those guys, it would be stay the hell off social media for a while and just get yourself centered, you know?
Well, we just talk to them. When you put the dangers out there, then at least they see it and they notice it and they're like, okay, I could deal with it a little bit better. And again, like, listen, Instagram, we all feel so freaking left out of things when we see somebody else's Instagram post that is touched up, which, by the way, is a fraction of a second of a 24-hour day. Think about that. And suddenly you think your life sucks because of that one fraction of a second that has been touched up and filtered in a 24-hour day period. Somehow, some way, we've got to...
Around that. But where does that come from? Right? It doesn't come from the person who's touching the picture up.
It comes from us.
That's their problem, right? It's like exactly what you were saying. That's their fucking issue. Mm-hmm. Again, if you have that self-love, then that doesn't penetrate the armor too much. It's like, oh, well, that's that person's issue. This is not going to make me feel any less about myself.
Even as a kid, that fear of being left out, right? That comes from childhood. So even as, you know, you can have the most success in the world, sometimes we see it, we're still like, oh, how'd I miss that? Oh, damn, how'd they get that? It's just how our brains work. But again, once we put it out there, we're trying to, if you show it to them, like I said, we put every elephant in the room, then they could recognize and go, oh yeah, no, that's their fault. That shit's not real. That's just a fraction of a second a day. No. I've done other stuff here. I've loved myself up this day.
Okay, so we're winding down. This will air on Thursday, the day of the first game. You're Jay Glazer.
I am.
Break something on daddy issues that we can direct people to the podcast to say, only on daddy issues will you hear something broken by Jay Glazer about the season, about the game tonight, about whatever. Go. Now, well,
since you are paying me, I think you're paying me $250,000 to do this show. So no problem. I don't know what you're getting paid, but I really appreciate that.
Yeah, $500,000.
Yes.
What can I break on the game tonight? Oh, shit. Joe, well, there's nothing to break, man. This is a boring. Well, here's the thing. I know at least with the Chiefs, this isn't breaking news, but they're boring. But it kind of the COVID kind of helped them a little bit, because normally it's so hard to repeat as a world champion, because during the, you know, after you win something, you finish up and man, you go around and you do this award show and that award show and everybody starts thinking, I'm the reason we won. I'm the reason. And all of a sudden they come back and that's a team killer. Well, the Chiefs didn't have that. They didn't have all award season. They didn't have all these shows and they didn't have, you know, restaurant openings now from every player and book deals and this and that and that. So it's like Andy Reid on the other day, I didn't even bring up the two-peat. Haven't even brought up repeating at all. Like, hasn't even come up, because we've just, you know, it's just been a different world. So it almost distracted them from talking about repeating, which he said, I think it helped us.
What about? I'm going to say this, Oliver. Jay Glazer says COVID is good. Is that fair?
What about?
I already got killed for one COVID story this offseason. I'm out of that.
What about Brady's numbers after Thursday's game?
I don't want to go against his numbers about the Saints, but I think overall this year, I think I'll have the best numbers he's had in 10 years.
Wow.
Yeah. I think it wasn't just Bruce that was talking about how lively Tom's arm was. Mm-hmm. And shoot, there was, I think, I forget the quarterback, but Bruce is like, I've only been around one quarterback with a better arm than Tom the way he is now. I was like, shit. Mm-hmm. So everybody thinks, well, he can't get the deep ball down. Man, that's not what we are seeing there.
Ooh, here's a good question that you don't have to answer. But, you know, all this shit that was going on with all the controversy with Drew Brees. Does he take a knee
Oh, I don't know. I don't know.
That's because
I don't know because I haven't talked. I got to be honest with you. I've been trying not to go so much because I know what my feelings and thoughts are. But then, you're friends with 1,000 people in this league, and then you're hearing it from them. It kind of, man, there's so much. Some teams are going to do it together. Some teams are gonna, I think regardless, right, if you got – the biggest thing we need right now is just respect. If someone stands – so if someone stands, it doesn't mean they're against Black Lives Matter.
Yeah.
If someone kneels, it doesn't mean they're against the military and the flag, right? It does, but I think people are just looking at it because there's so much hate right now that that's it. This is what it means. Dude, absolutely not.
Couldn't agree more. That's the fucking problem right now. Everyone's angry. There's so much anger.
And that's the problem. So just they got to remind each other, hey, I still love this cat. You know, the great thing about a locker room, I mean, if the world was like a locker room, we'd be all right. The NFL locker room is the only place you'll have some big, fat, white, racist lineman being the best man at a young thug black guy's wedding. You know, and it's just, they care about one color in there. That's silver. That's the ring. That's all they care about. And you fight your problems out in about 2 seconds. You could joke about everything and nobody gets all pissed off about it. You're in there trying to solve the world's problems together, but it's together, you know? And that's where a locker room, man. I wish the rest of the world was like that.
Yeah.
That's a great way to end, man. That's a great way to end. I know you gotta run. Oliver likes to ask one question at the end and then we'll let you go. Go ahead, Ollie.
Yeah, so we ask this to everyone. You take your dad, right? You have genetics involved. You got learned behavior. What is one, there's a two-parter. What is one thing that you have taken from your father that you are proud of to carry through? And then what is the one thing that you have genetically sort of inherited from him that you wish you did not have?
Okay, that's easy. One, the work ethic from my father. Again, I'll work the world, my dreams will come true. The thing that I inherited from my dad that I wish I didn't was the fact that I'm 5'7".
You've been compensating for that decades.
So, hey, fuck you, Dad, thanks. Although, I'm a lot taller than you, Joe, than when your ass is laying on the floor, so.
That's right, exactly. That's right, you would knock my ass out. I know that. Hey, just tell Oliver who you were writing for back in that Giants locker room. What paper was that?
The Giants Extra Magazine, run by Chuck Persine and Bobby Duhon. And then I was the New York Post for $9,000 a year.
Oh, the New York Post.
The youngest columnist at the New York Post, they're paying me $9,000 a year. Because the editor's like, the editor, Greg Gallo, he's like the editor from Spider-Man. He's like, you're a snot-nosed punk. Where are you going to get something else? This is what we're giving you. So I was making $9,000 a year from them and $450 a year from New York One TV for, man, that went on until 1999. So almost 10 years. That's the most I made was $9,400 a year. So every day, Strahan had to drive me back into New York City because I couldn't afford subway and bus fare both ways. So I owe him like $26,000 in Lincoln Tunnel.
And now you're sitting in front of a wine rack. Well done.
Look at that. Hey, people want to know if I have a drinking problem. I don't. I'm good at it.
Yeah.
Totally different.
I agree.
All right, man. Be well. Right. Thanks for joining
us.
Guys.
Thank you, brother.
Thanks.
Appreciate
love
it, man.
See you. Have a great year.
Love you, Joe.
Love you, buddy.
All right. See you, buddy.
Later, man.
Bye. Hi, Oliver.
Hi, Joe.
How are you? I can't see you. I haven't seen you this entire time. It's unnerving to not see my co-host.
Oh, really? Wow. Yeah. The whole time I never started my video. That sucks.
I can't wait to hear about your birthday because I've not... You treat your birthday, I feel like my wife treats her birthday, like it's just a national holiday and that's your day to be pampered. So what did you do on Monday that made your birthday
great? It couldn't be more opposite. It's opposite. I honestly don't really care much about my birthday, but I will say that this was one of my favorite birthdays that I've ever had in my life. It was incredible. We went camping, you know, I bought my new trailer and it was our first voyage, our maiden voyage. And the kids and Kurt and Boston and some friends camped on the river, you know, ate, cooked, drank, It was just, it was amazing. I got good presents. My wife just did it up. She cares about me. She loves me, which is always great, you know? And then we fucking get home and it's September 8th, September 9th now, but it was September 8th and it snowed about a foot.
Wow. It is 96 degrees where I'm sitting right now.
Yeah. Yeah. It was 90 degrees on my birthday. And then on the 8th, it snowed a foot.
That's got to be a sign for something. I don't know what it is, but that's got to be a sign.
And today, there's locusts coming.
Oh, good. So yeah. I think the four horsemen of the apocalypse show up, and then we're all dead.
It's all happening.
What I was going to say was my wife, when we were all hanging out in Aspen, came away from that experience, and it was... And we'd all been tested, so it was all good. Don't worry about that part. It was Oliver, his wife, Erin, all the kids. Kate was there for a minute. Kurt, Goldie, you know, these are powerful forces in nature. And we leave that party that night or that get together. And Michelle, who loves Erin like a sister, goes, you know what? Erin just gets stuff done. Like they all kind of take their cue from your wife. Mm-hmm. Like she kind of runs it. And so I'm imagining that for your birthday, she is the type that gets it done in a good way.
Yeah. Oh, without a doubt. I mean, the trailer itself looks amazing because she's so specific. She's so detailed. I wake up in the morning, she's made coffee. I have all my presents that have been laid out. You know, she organized the campsites. She got one for Kurt and he didn't even know it. You know, and I'm like, oh no, she already got you one like 2 months ago. You know, she does get shit done. That is her deal, without a doubt.
So Kurt Russell needed a campsite. He couldn't like hack his way into a clearing somehow by being Kurt Russell and then set up shop there.
No, it's funny. I'm just teaching him the internet. So, you know, we're advancing.
Oh my God.
We're advancing, you know, we're so into this camping thing. And I got him all of the apps, you know, rec.gov, Dirt. There's all these different sort of camping apps and I signed him up and now we're searching for sites. And now our next phase is for me to teach him how to actually purchase it. You know what I mean? And go through that process. So, you know, we're working hard over here.
I feel like Kurt would not be a good credit card guy.
Oh, like, God.
I feel like he's cash. Like, that's it.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. In fact, I think this is the first time that he's used a credit card for an online situation, you know, because he doesn't want anyone to steal his credit card, which is smart. I mean, I guess I've gotten lucky, but this is the first time. I'm like, Pa, you got to do it. You got to do it. I mean, this is how we book sites. Like you can't wire them money. I mean, you can't have Stagecoach Western Union, like bring them
going on to Western Union. See, I'm going to wire you 20 grand.
Exactly. It was fun, man. Great, great day. Really, really great day.
I actually took the step to go online and look for Jordans for you. For your birthday. And
didn't work
the ones
out.
That you sent me, the ones that you sent me, I went and I made a bid for
a
like
bid.
One pair was a bid. It was on like eBay. So
no, you had to go get, on GOAT or StockX.
Uh-huh. Well, one of them I put in for, it was the asking price was $1,000. I was like, all right, I'll do that. I'll do that for Oliver. That's fine. I'll pay $1,000. And then I put the bid in and they're like, nope, did I say $1,000? I meant two. It went to $2,000 for that
pair
of
shoes. What shoes were these?
I don't know. Those ugly like pink and red things you sent me that I can't believe you want.
Oh, the Strange Loves. Those are beautiful. By the way, Sim got me a beautiful, beautiful pair of sneakers.
And then the fact that you have like hooves, you have like baby feet. What size are your feet?
Nine.
Who has size 9? You're the only person I know under 10. It's like you have little like hoofs.
I know. You know what? Like there's a tiny insecurity about telling people my foot size because I think they immediately associate it with my dick, obviously. But my dick is pretty good. You know what I mean? Like it doesn't have the correlation, you know? So, but I still have an insecurity about having a nine foot. There's some shoes I have 8.5, by the way, depending.
Man, you should not. Let's cut that out. If I'm you, I want one thing cut out of this podcast. It would be that. By the way, I'm headed to New Orleans on Saturday for game one. I've got Tampa Bay, Tom Brady at you. The Saints, Drew Brees. I got my hair all cut and colored for the start of the season.
Oh, you did, dude. It's got that blonde vibe again.
So I've gone from coloring like brown. I'm dipping into the blonde tones. So because my hair is gray blonde when I just let it go. So I'm like, let's just celebrate the blonde part and take out the gray.
I like it. I think you look good. I think you're like look pretty sharp. Your face looks thin. I think you're ready to go, dude. You are ready to go. Okay. Are you excited for the game? I know you're not
quite
excited.
I can't wait
to travel and all that shit, but like the game itself.
You know what? I can't wait for the game, but I'm really anxious to see what it feels like to do a real NFL game in an empty stadium.
Yeah. Crazy.
Because we get there sometimes 4 hours before the game and it's empty. And then, mm-hmm. you know, a few players will go out and we'll go down on the field and we'll talk to, you know, whomever. We'll talk to mm-hmm. the quarterbacks. We'll talk to whatever. And coaches and get like the last minute updates. And so they're out there, you know, guys are playing catch and but the game is going to be played. This is probably on our schedule as it stands right now. This is our best scheduled game of the year, and there will be nobody in the seats. I feel like even real sports fans are not totally aware that the NFL season starts this week. It's like this is real because there's been no preseason, and now this is the first time and the only time Tom Brady will make a debut for a team other than the Patriots.
Jesus, it's huge. At
a divisional rival, and you want to go, hey, wake the kids, phone the neighbors. Like Letterman used to say, there's a big game on Sunday in the afternoon.
That's right. It's huge. And by the way, you should use that.
Wake the kids, phone the neighbors.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like it.
Everybody, wake the kids, phone the neighbors.
There's a big game going on tonight.
Remember, there is no wagering. Yeah.
You're right. It's a great point, Joe, because it just doesn't feel like it's got that buildup, that lead up. I think you're right. I think there are a lot of football fans who probably don't even realize that Thursday is the beginning of the season, and you're not going to get a bigger, higher profile game than game one. I mean, that's massive.
So here's what we have to hope as a network. Thursday night, which is tonight as this airs, it's Houston and Kansas City. So you got the world champs against Houston, two dynamic teams, two great quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. And you have to hope that people find their way to it and go, oh, man, this is on. And then now Sunday comes. And Sunday you've got all the early games, and that's great. But ours is late on Sunday. Mm-hmm. And that's where you have to hope that there's like a gradual crescendo to the biggest crowd of the weekend. And that's, you know, our ratings on Sunday afternoons are always the highest on any network. And we have to hope that people go, oh my God, it's Tom Brady, 6-time champion, played 9 Super Bowls.
Yeah.
Taking on Drew Brees, who this might be it for Brees. He's already signed with NBC.
Yeah.
So this crazy. Is as good as it gets. But here's one thing, as I just said, here's what's happening in your neck of the woods.
Yeah.
What I've never understood about the Today Show is when they go to break, they go, and coming up next, it'll be Martha Stewart with a cooking segment. You're just going to knock your socks off. But first, this is Today on NBC. I don't understand that.
Yeah.
I don't know what that means. But first. Yeah.
But first, Today
on NBC. I don't know. That's always bugged me.
I know. It's gimmicky. You know, but but first, Today on NBC, meaning like, I guess we've got to go over Today first before we get into the other stuff.
It's nonsensical. And then, yeah, you know, I love Dylan. I don't know her last name on there, who does the weather sometimes too, when Al's sleeping or whatever. So Al says, here's what's happening in your neck of the woods. And then Dylan says, now she's got to have a catchphrase. So her, yeah, her catchphrase is, and here's what's happening outside your window. And then they go to the local weather and you know, it's,
yeah,
hey, and it's never clean. Yeah, they come, yeah, up cut, and then they send it back, yeah, and it's awkward. Yeah. It's just, that should be done better. That pisses me off so, yeah, much.
No, I know. We got to have those gimmicks. I mean, I like that one better, I think, outside of your window.
Right.
I think it brings it a little, it makes it a little more personal, because then I can look outside of my window and
you've relate. Got snow, and I've got steam coming off the driveway as I look outside my window right now.
Oh my God. I know. It's been insane. Well, California's burning up too. It's hot as shit right now.
Yeah. But you're in a little pocket of paradise.
Can I come to one of these games ever? You know, I mean, or is that impossible? Like, if I was like, I want to come to an empty stadium, I mean, do I have to go through all the protocols?
You know, I don't know. I let me report back after week one,
yeah,
and see how it is, because we've had presidents in the broadcast booth. I've interviewed George W. Bush. I interviewed his father. I've interviewed Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like real big time, mm-hmm, targets, which is, mm-hmm, a terrible word to say, but, mm-hmm, they go, hey, you know, the day of the game, there's going to be nobody allowed in the booth. Secret Service will be there. It'll be you and, you know, Tim McCarver and, mm-hmm, one person and one cameraman. And that's it. When, mm-hmm, the president comes, there will have been nobody else in the booth all day. And then you, mm-hmm, show up the day of the game, and it's like you got an electrician's in there and the makeup person's in there. You know, it's like they lay out this plan, and then,
yeah,
it just goes up in smoke, and, yeah, nobody cares. And it's like, oh, and you know, here's somebody with a suitcase that's ticking. I mean, it's they don't right, they don't follow through. I'm like, oh, are we protecting these people? Or so I'm thinking that the COVID protocol sounds, mm-hmm, robust and intense right now.
Right.
But when we get there, it's going to be like, oh, hey, how you doing? Oh, hey, good. Okay. They're kicking off. Let's do the game.
Right. That seems to happen. I think that's even on a smaller level with families, with friends. It started off like, you know, we need to have meetings on how we're going to do this, how we're going to socially distance, how we're going to do that, which is all good. But then by week two, you know, it's like all of a sudden I'm like, well, what the fuck's happening right now? How come everyone is sort of together and hanging out, right, but you've been to a restaurant here and, you know, you went to Walmart over here and, you know, it's tough, man. I don't know. Cause we all want to live normal. We all want to get back to some normalcy, you know, and it's I'm craving it. I can't fucking wait. You know, I cannot wait till there's a vaccine or this just dissipates to the point where we can all have the 60s again and just make love to each other. Like, I'm ready. I'm ready. I'll make love to you.
Okay. I can't wait. Well, then I'm hoping for the stay-at-home order to come back into place. Are you, has Goldie Hawn ever been in a Walmart?
Oh God. Yeah. Yeah. My mom's badass. My mom,
that because I don't think my mom has been.
Oh yeah, no. I mean, so, my mom, okay, is Goldie Hawn, but she's like, as I mean, she just cruises into, of course, you know, especially, you know, her success story is really amazing. You know, she's been through a ton, but even now, hell yeah, my mom still loves.
Put in a good word for the podcast. Maybe we could get her on sometime.
Oh yeah, she's coming on. She'll do it.
Okay. Just like my sister Julie and I are going on sibling revelry. When's that happen?
Whenever you want, Joe. You know, you're just busy.
Will it ever air? Will it ever air?
No, but it doesn't matter. You know, it'll still.
You'll do the lights and turn the mics on.
We'll,
and they won't be.
Yeah, we'll do the whole
recording
thing.
Devices. Okay.
We'll do the whole thing.
I want to walk out of there feeling better about myself.
Good. Yeah. Well, don't come to sibling revelry then, because we all feel like, worse.
How'd you like Jay Glazer? Good?
Oh, God, yeah. He's awesome. My God. What a cool, inspirational guy, you know? I mean, just open, and I love what he's doing. I mean, aside from all the football and aside from his popularity and his bravado, you know, that guy's softy, you know, that guy cares.
He is. It's funny you say that because I think there's certain people that travel a roundabout weird path to get to a certain place where what got them there and what they've been focused on really isn't what they do going forward. It's not even their purpose. Their purpose is to help other people. So he's been an info guy, but by being an info guy, he's met everybody. And now he can bring people in from, and we didn't even get into this. I think that thing was sparked by Fox studio show going on the road to different military bases over the years. He saw that. He's with NFL people. He's like, look, there's some depression when these folks get out of the business that they're in, and why don't we put them together? So, you know, all of this has led to him helping people and in essence, I think in some cases, keeping people on the earth.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. I mean, honestly, it's incredible. And it also makes me feel completely inadequate. I need to do more. I need to do something. I give money, you know, I'm charitable, but I need to give my time more. You know, I need to, I understand what he means, how good it feels, but it also makes me feel like I just have dropped the ball when it comes to service.
You know, maybe do something and get arrested again, and then you might have to do community service. So it'll be court ordered, and then, you know, you can help.
Well, we should start a foundation for kids, like Daddy Issues Foundation, to like help kids who don't have dads, you know?
Oh, I would love that.
Me too, by the way. Honestly, like that is something, even since I was a kid, you know, I've always wanted to be a dad. I mean, since I was in my early 20s, I wanted to be a father. And then when I do think about service and what I can do to give back and the arena that I want to get into, it always revolves around being a father, not just to my children, but potentially to other kids who aren't as lucky. You know, I don't know what that means. I've looked into the Big Brother programs and the Boys and Girls Club, blah, blah, blah. I've looked into things. I've yet to pull a trigger. But that's something that I would definitely love to sort of be a part of, you know. Maybe Daddy Issues has its own chapter.
We started this podcast. Maybe yes, that's the reason.
This isn't about higher purpose. Money. It's not about the money or the fame. This is about helping people.
This is actually dragging my fame down.
Yeah. Oh gosh. Yeah. You are way less popular.
Yeah. And you, I mean, I hope to God you come back firing on all cylinders with the CBS show. Because if you don't.
Shit, man. I don't know. There's rumors. There's rumors we might start shooting in November. I don't know. We'll see.
To go back to LA and leave your Hamlet?
Yeah. No, I'm leaving the Hamlet before Halloween. Kids want to do Halloween in LA, even though LA literally just today announced that Halloween is shut down. So, but we'll figure it out.
You're going to have him like get arrested. Wait, we arrested a pirate. And what does Rio want to go as? My Little Pony. We have a pirate and a My Little Pony in the back of the police car, squad car. We're bringing them in. They're Hudson kids.
Yep. They've been ringing doorbells for the last 28 minutes asking for
this
candy.
This is not socially correct.
This is fucking going crazy. I know. But,
well, good. Do you get a last question? And then we'll shut up. Do you get into why am I even asking you this? I know the answer. I was going to ask you, do you get into doing the Halloween costume thing? But I've seen you go. All out at your sister's Halloween party, like when you were the old school weightlifter with the bald cap and the mustache.
Jesus. It's my favorite holiday. I love it so much. I mean, the party alone is so fun. And just, you know, being able to dress up and go crazy. How's your wife? How are your children's?
Everybody's good. They're ready to launch my ass out of here twice a week. So I go to New Orleans this week and then Cleveland next week.
Are you excited? I mean, are you excited to get away from your family? Be honest. I mean, honestly.
No. No, it makes me sick to my stomach. Because boys are old enough to miss me now, but they don't get it. So,
yeah.
And they've had done nothing but FaceTime with me, and it's going to be like, where did he go? Because I'm going so much. It makes me sick.
Oh my God. Yeah,
but
I know.
I'm not complaining about it. I got to do something. They're not paying me to be a nice guy.
No, I know. I know. I mean, that there's a break. There's a nice break. You here's the thing. I've been through it. I get it. Right. And you have as well. But I think there's hurt and guilt a little bit. And then you get on the airplane and that kind of melts away. And now you're alone and you've got your own time. You've got your own space. Of course, you're going to miss your family, but it's nice. It's nice to just sort of settle into yourself for at least 2 days. Right. You know?
Well, I'm excited to sleep in the morning without the monitor at 6:45 with them talking to each other, which is the cutest thing.
Is Michelle
ever,
does Michelle hate you at all? Or?
Oh, no. No. She gets it. That's been the best thing about, that's not been the best thing. That's been like number 48 on the list, but marrying somebody in this business that gets it, she doesn't fight that at all. I think if she fights anything, it's like when I'm home and I go, I think I'm going to go play golf on Thursday and then leave Saturday and then leave the next Wednesday. Then it becomes a bit of an issue, and rightly so, but I'd need a getaway too.
Yeah. Is she going back to work?
Yeah, right now, the reason why this whole technological mess happened is she's in our basement interviewing people for ESPN. So she interviewed Favre yesterday, Peyton Manning today, a bunch of other people trying to crank out features for Monday Night Football. So yeah, she's working.
Nice. Good. Good for you guys. Is she showing off her new assets?
That's something I pay attention to every time.
Yeah. It's like, whoa, relax. All right. You know,
you're talking about the Botox, right?
Yeah.
Let's just say, since we're both back to work this week, I'm not the only one that got their hair colored.
yuck. Yeah.
All right. It's good to see your face. Right. Happy birthday, you 44-year-old. Don't get too excited when your fake Nikes show up.
Oh my God. You probably got
They may be misspelled. It's spelled N-E-K-I, right?
Necky. Well, good luck with the eBay and the bidding. I could have shown you a much easier way to go about this, but hey, thanks for the thought. I love you.
Okay, love you. Are you going to watch the game on Sunday and text me things to say?
Of course I am.
Okay, of course I am.
At some point, you got to say, that guy's got some daddy issues.
Oh, my God.
Tom Brady back in Tampa. I don't know. He feels like he's got a few daddy issues.
Hey, that report courtesy of Jay Glazer, who appeared this week on Daddy Issues. Can I get away with it that way?
Yeah. Yeah, you can.
Do you know how fast I would be fired for that?
Oh, my God. Yeah, I know. We'll work it out.
Hey, Joe, that was a great little promo that would have cost you $2 million that you just got for free. You're fired.
That's amazing. All right.
All right. Talk to you later.